This is Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the unofficial start of the weekend here in the Crescent City, friends. Yeah, hey, Brian Diaz here with you. Happy to be here with you today, friends. Hey, at NOLA Drinks, we've got an idea for a tagline for Essential Consulting. It's a front where you can pay for as much backdoor access as you want. Got a good show coming up for you here today, friends. Chock full of interviews once again this week, as I like to say. Or I said that last week. I guess it's a trend. But yeah, a couple interesting chats that we have coming up for you here today. First off, after take a break here with this segment, we chat with Barbara Frank, who is with Dr. Constantine Frank Winery up in the Finger Lakes region of New York. Barbara is the granddaughter of the late founder, Dr. Constantine Frank. And we taste some wines and have a good time. And really interesting chat. We and a special shout out there to a Martin Wine Cellar in Mandeville. I mentioned this during the interview, and my friend Kaylin Morgan, who is the general manager there, was gracious enough to host us for that one. And we tasted through some wines, and Barbara came in with my good pal Darren Alisto, who is a wine rep here in town with one of the local distributors, and a fun chat. And it, you know, something that we do on the show from time to time, haven't done it a whole lot lately though, and I was kind of missing it, was just, you know, talking to somebody who's with a winery or, you know, spirits brand or something, and tasting through their portfolio. It was really a lot of fun, and you know, kind of live tasting. And sometimes people ask me, you know, do you get nervous doing that, tasting stuff that you haven't tasted before on the radio? Granted, we tape this, but more or less it's live, right? We don't really edit or anything like that. And I really enjoy it. I've been, you know, I worked in the wine industry for a long time, wrote tasting notes, have done wine reviews, that sort of thing, wine evaluation. And so, yeah, I trust myself to do that. And we just sort of taste through some stuff and have some conversation about what's showing on the palate and on the nose, and some really lovely, lovely wines. It would be nice to see more of the Finger Lakes wines available in a broader area, especially here in Louisiana, where you don't see too many. I know some of the Dr. Constantine Frank stuff is around. I know I had tasted their dry Riesling before. That's kind of their anchor wine, and it's a tremendous expression of dry Riesling. We tasted their Cab Franc and several other wines, and off dry Riesling as well, and just a sparkling rosé, which was very, very nice. So we'll talk with Barbara, get a little bit of background and the story of Dr. Constantine Frank Winery, talk a little bit about the region. Of course, we taste through, I think it's about a half a dozen wines or so. So that's a really interesting chat. Check that out. And then in the second half of the show, the beer guys, Matt and Sal, are back joining us as they usually do, the unpaid beer correspondents, as we like to say. They are both certified beer judges here in Louisiana. Sal is also a newly minted certified mead judge, and we actually taste a couple meads, pretty interesting stuff there. And Matt is the brewmaster at Old Rail Brewing Company, which is a very, very, very fine microbrewery in Old Mandeville. And that's actually where what we usually do is we head over there to the brewery, and we sit down and talk suds with those guys. And that's what we did in this go-round, as we always do. And it's always fun because these guys are just such a wealth of knowledge when it comes to beer and, you know, Sal with mead now and stuff like that. And we talk a bit about some, you know, warmer weather brews. We taste some of the stuff that Matt has going on there and kind of fits that mold. Saison, we tasted, he does a great Saison. And we talk about all kinds of different stuff. An interesting one that we talk about is the chloride and sulfate ratio. It's kind of idea, we're talking about IPAs and bitterness and IBUs, the International Bitterness or Bitter Unit. And this kind of formula that brewers would use on their levels of chloride and sulfates, and to, you know, basically we get into this, how this kind of works, but how you bring out the bitterness in beers, and there's a ratio of how you use those two what am I looking for here? Those two minerals? No, they're not minerals. Compounds, chemical compounds, right? And we contrast the West Coast IPA style with the New England, so-called New England IPA style, and how those come to be. Really interesting conversation. We talk about water and some other stuff. So cool stuff there. Stick around for the beer guys in the second half of the show. Matt and Sal, should be fun. A little bit of news here and a couple events, friends, for you. James Beard Award winners were announced here for 2018. And once again, New Orleans, a pretty good showing. You know, I'm always a little biased, think that there could be a little bit more, but pretty good showing. Let's see, I think we had three award winners in this round of the announced awards. They gave recognition or mention, again, I should say, to Dong Phuong Bakery, which was the Vietnamese bakery in New Orleans here that was given the Classics Award, and that was actually handed out in January. So, but they acknowledged that again here. But the newly announced award winners from here include, outstanding bar program was given to Cure, the Uptown Craft Cocktail Bar, kind of the first new wave, if you will, of craft cocktail bars here in New Orleans. So congratulations to Neil and Kirk and those guys there. Job well done. Good recognition. And that's on the heels, of course, of our good buddy Chris Hanna at French 75 winning last year. So, and that's national level stuff right there, friend. So good news there. And then Nina Compton, the chef there and owner at Compare Le Pan, co-owner, I should say, took home Best Chef for the South region. So congratulations to her. Great recognition there and well-deserved. And then also the 2018 James Beard Foundation Who's Who of Food and Beverage in America inductees. And it's kind of like a lifetime achievement thing, I think. And that's this from New Orleans here. There are four inductees, and collectively, Lolly Brennan and T. Adelaide Martin, who are, of course, the co-proprietors of Commander's Palace, are friends there at Sobu, as well as Cafe Adelaide, and they were given that award. So, yeah, all in all, pretty good showing for New Orleans, and not bad there with the coveted James Beard Awards. Let's see, an event coming up here, or actually three events, but the Youth Leadership Council, I always like to mention these concerts, the Wednesday at the Square. They're always really, really fun. They're at Lafayette Square, of course, there in the CBD, and there are three more concerts left. The May 17th date, I think, was an open date, which they now filled with the great Anders Osborne playing, and the opening band is Motel Radio. Then May 23rd, following Wednesday, is Maggie Kerner, and then her opening act is going to be Naughty Professor. They're fantastic, by the way. And then Shamar Allen closing out the season on Wednesday, May 30th. And Shamar Allen and the opening band is Robin Barnes and the Firebirds. They're also great. That's a really great lineup there with Shamar and Robin Barnes. Should be a lot of fun. That's 5 to 8 p.m. Wednesdays at Lafayette Square. Put on. It's a benefit for the Youth Leadership Council. Great organization that supports community service projects and youth involvement and leadership and community service. So good things there. Get out there. Check it out. Get some drinks. Get some food, enjoy some good music, bring a chair there at Lafayette Square. You know, weather's still pretty good. It's cooperating, right? You know, and I will say this, it's over, right? We know this, it's over. And I'm not talking about Jazz Fest, although maybe symbolically that kind of heralded the change, but spring's over. We were pretty lucky. We had a pretty good spring this year. But now when you look at the long-term forecast and you see every day is 85, 86, 88, 90, 91, and it doesn't get much below 70 at night, maybe upper 60s, but it's humid. And if we get a so-called cold front now that will come through, it'll just mean that it's 85 instead of 88. So it's that long, slow death march to August, as I like to say. But hey, it was great while it lasted, friends. Spring, and even still the evening, like last night, we were out in town checking some things out, getting a little sneak preview of the soon-to-be-open Long Way Tavern, unofficial sneak preview, and we were walking back to the car, my lovely wife Sylvia and I, and it, beautiful evening. Sun was setting, and the temperature, it was very, very pleasant outside, so we still have the evenings going for us. Friends, one other event that I want to flag your attention to here before we take the break, a really cool fundraiser going on. My good friend Heather Twitchell, who is the food and beverage manager for French Quarter Festivals, her mom is named Anna Ross Twitchell, and unfortunately Anna has been battling brain cancer for a number of years, and she's a very fine artist and actually stopped painting and then has now picked her brushes back up again. And she's done this pretty famous noted series of paintings called Church Ladies. So you kind of imagine images of ladies in their Sunday finest going to church. And they are doing a brain cancer awareness event, art show, and fundraiser that is this Saturday, May 12th, 5 to 7 p.m. at Gallery Orange, which is located at 819 Royal Street. Again, it's called Church Ladies, an art show and fundraiser. And it's the art of Anna Ross Twitchell. And it's to benefit Brain Cancer Awareness Month. Some of the proceeds will be going to an LSU program that researches brain cancer. So go check that out. Gallery Orange, 819 Rural Street, this Saturday, 5 to 7 p.m. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the Noel Drink Show. We're going to be back, chat with Barbara Frank from Dr. Constantine Frank Winery. And then after that, Sal and Matt, the beer guys, come on back.
Hi, New Orleans. friends, it's Laura from Sobu, and I'm here with Chef Juan Carlos.
Sobu's got happier hour. It's 3 to 6 from 3 to 6.
It's bar bars, sips, and snacks, all for $3 to $6 from 3 to 6 p.m. every day.
Laura's got something to please everyone at the bar for happier hour, all for 3 to 6 here at Sobu.
And we know you'll want to try a smoky pulled pork taco or any of the other delicious snacks on our happier hour menu.
Sobu's happier hour, every day from 3 to 6, 310 Charter Street in the quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land wherever you may be. Thanks for tuning in today, friends. And yes, we are here at the Martin Wine Cellar in Mandeville. First time, thanks to my good buddy, Kalen Morgan, the general manager here for hosting us today. And pleased to be joined by my guest, Barbara Frank from Dr. Constantine Frank Winery. How are you?
Great, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yes, absolutely. Welcome all the way down from New York. Do you live in New York, Barbara?
I do live in New York, but New Orleans and Louisiana is my second home. My husband and I have been coming down for Jazz Fest for a number of years.
Okay.
This year, actually, French Quarter Fest, Jazz Fest, and my son is about to graduate from Tulane in about 2 weeks' time.
Fantastic. So you got a lot of roots here.
Yeah,
have you
definitely.
Here since French Quarter Festival?
French Quarter Fest, then we flew in 2 days ago, and then we'll go back and then come back for graduation.
And catching some Jazz Fest?
Catching some Jazz Fest tomorrow, for sure.
Great.
My husband and friends are there today. So.
Oh, excellent. Sorry to keep you
away from Jazz Fest. No,
it's all
good. It's all good.
The market. Well, it's good to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Let's do this. So tell us a little bit about, I think people here are becoming more familiar with both the Finger Lakes region in New York, as well as with Dr. Constantine Frank Wines.
Great.
Tell us a little bit about the winery.
Sure, yes. I'd be happy to. Well, we have quite a story to tell. We just celebrated our 55th anniversary. Still family owned in our fourth generation now, which is becoming increasingly more rare, especially in the wine business in this country. We have been growing our grapes sustainably and are solar powered. So we definitely want to work with the land and produce the best wines that we can. This has translated into us being New York's most award-winning winery, as well as the winery of New York with the greatest name recognition. We are sold in over 35 states and a couple of foreign countries right now.
And that's growing now, isn't it?
Yes.
You guys, I know, and as you just said, I know you guys have been leading the charge in many ways to not only garner recognition for the winery, but to really put Finger Lakes on the map as a world-class winery.
Absolutely. It was my grandfather, Constantine, Dr. Frank, who actually revolutionized the entire East Coast wine industry. He was the first to successfully grow the classic European grape varieties or the international grape varieties.
So doing the vinifera thing.
The vinifera thing, exactly. And everyone thought it was too cold. He came to this country with a PhD in viticulture from Russia, from the Ukraine more specifically, and transformed the entire East Coast wine industry. In fact, Wine Spectator included him in their Hall of Fame a while back, and more recently for their 40th anniversary, included him in a list of 40 leaders in wine and food that have had the greatest impact in the industry during the last 40 years.
That's cool.
We were very, very proud of him.
Barbara, when was the winery established, actually?
1962.
Okay.
But we did start planting the vineyards in the 50s and actually have some of the oldest vinifera plantings in the country. In fact, our Pinot Noir vines have been Singled out as the second oldest Pinot Noir vine plantings in the country.
Oh, very interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And now, and you yourself, what is your role with
yes.
the company? Just so
well, I used to be the full-time winemaker in the late 80s. Now I consult primarily on our sparkling wine production, which is all Méthode Champenoise. We've been handcrafting world-class sparklers for over 30 years now. Twice named Best New World Sparkling Wine, twice served at the White House, and all have received numerous accolades. I get to talk about the wines and sort of act as an ambassador of the winery. I focus my energies in the metropolitan area of New York, New Jersey. I'd love to come down to NOLA.
You get your trip down here, right?
Exactly.
There you go. It's always a desirable market to
definitely.
Work. You know, wink, wink, I'm going to go on a business trip.
Right.
That's great. Well, so let's, because what we're doing here is we're sort of chatting about the winery and the wines and the vineyard and so mm-hmm. on. But let's talk a little bit about what we have in our glass
yes,
right
excellent.
Now.
Yes, excellent.
So lovely.
Thank
here.
You. We're starting out with our 2016 Grüne Veltliner, a very important variety and historically grown in Austria. But we've been growing it now for over 10 years, and actually growing it on our second vineyard. The winery is located on Keuka Lake in the Finger Lakes region of New York, but we do own vineyards on Seneca Lake as well. Very different soils, different climate, and it's a richer soil on Seneca Lake
okay.
and a warmer region, and that's where the Grüner is really shining.
Sure.
That's where
okay.
we grow our Grüner. It's been described as the best Grüner produced in this country. Numerous accolades, was actually served at a White House luncheon for the German Chancellor. Four of our wines were selected,
okay.
including the Grüner Veltliner.
Very nice. And, yeah. I'm guessing that there's, as I think most of the region has, is good evening cooling.
Yes.
You get that diurnal swing that you want. The acid structure in this wine is very nice.
Absolutely. Thank you. Yes. Because we are a cool region, our wines tend to be a more elegant, food-friendly style. Alcohols are more restrained. The natural acidity is more pronounced. I think the Grüner is showing classic Grüner, delicate herbal notes, that little bit of white pepper heat on the finish. Really nice food pairability with the Grüner.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we always like to say this around here, kind of an easy go-to. This is going to go great with oysters, right?
Yes.
This is going to go great across the board with seafood.
Yeah.
There's a bright fruit note on this, though, that mm-hmm. I find very well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can see this going very nicely mm-hmm. with salmon and some other
yes.
things like that as well.
Definitely, yeah.
That's very,
yeah.
very nice.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. What do we have next here?
Next, we have an ancient grape variety called Arcazzatelli, one of the oldest known grape varieties, originating in Georgia, the Republic of Georgia, considered one of the oldest known grape varieties, also one of the most widely planted grape varieties, but primarily in the Republic of Georgia and Eastern Europe. Fascinating grape. We like to call it Arcats for short at the winery.
It's a little easier to say,
A little easier. has this lovely herbal spiciness. This is grown on our Keuka vineyard, which contains a lot of shales. You get that really nice minerality. A little fuller, a little more of a mid-palate note here, and that wonderful, vibrant acidity. Picture this paired with oysters, with sushi. Great with Cajun and Creole cuisine. Also lovely with Thai, Indian, and Mexican
sure,
cuisine.
Sure, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Very nice white stone fruit notes
yes.
on this.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, that mid-palate mouthfeel mm-hmm. is there mm-hmm. kind of a very peachy kind of note
yeah.
on this. So it's very... Very. Also, I can see this being very food friendly.
Yeah, very. Foodies love this wine. Mm-hmm. Chefs love to do food pairings with this wine. It started out as a bit of a cult wine for us, but became so popular that we increased our plantings. And it for certain foods, it's the perfect go to.
How many acres do you all have?
Altogether, it's about 150 planted.
Okay. Everything is estate that you all do, or do you work with some independent growers?
We have actually a second label, not currently in this market, called
okay.
Salmon Run, where we typically will use the fruit of our younger vines and also purchase some fruit from our neighbors, and that goes into the salmon,
yeah,
second line.
Gotcha.
Second line, second label.
I always like to talk about that because sometimes people hedge, and there's nothing wrong with working with good farmers that know what they're
yes,
doing, right?
Yes, mm-hmm, exactly.
Well, this is a really nice wine. How long have you guys been doing this one?
The Arcats was one of our first. When my grandfather first started planting the vineyard, He actually viewed the winery more as an experimental station, and we had 60 different grape varieties from around the world. He wanted to prove to the world that we could grow these vinifera European grape varieties. Mm-hmm. Over the years, we focused primarily on varieties we thought would do best in our cooler region, and now we're at about 20. So it does. We do offer a wonderful range of wine styles.
Barbara,
types.
With the Arcats, mm-hmm. or do we have a little batonnage? We have some good amount of lease contact going on this wine.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Yes, good. Thanks for pointing that out. Definitely, but no oak in this particular vintage.
Yeah, right. Sure.
Okay. There may be a vintage where we might put, let's say, 5% in older barrel. But not
just
this particular.
Just a mouthfeel.
Exactly.
Yeah, gotcha.
Exactly. Not well, every year.
Let's mm-hmm. do this, Barbara. We're going to take a little break here on the show. We're going to come back, talk a little bit more about the winery. We're going to taste. We've got four more lovely wines facing us right now that we're going to taste through. Friends are chatting with Barbara Frank from Dr. Frank Constantine Frank Winery in Finger Lakes, New York. Friends, take a little break here on the Noel Drink Show. Come on back.
French Market is a place where history is made fresh daily. From the historic Upper Pentalba building on Jackson Square to the ever-evolving Farmers Market, our six-block district celebrates New Orleans food, music, and culture through events, festivals, walking tours, health and fitness classes, and also children's workshops at the New Orleans Jazz Park. Visit our calendar of events at www.frenchmarket.org. The French Market. Making history fun since 1791.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Thanks for tuning in today. As always, Brian Diaz here with you on the Noel Drink Show. We are chatting with Barbara Frank from Dr. Constantine Frank Winery out of upstate New York, the Finger Lakes area. Thanks again, Barbara, for being here.
Thank you.
And I will say this, that you're here for you're dabbling in Jazz Fest a little bit while you're here. This is probably the last good weekend to be here before we start the long, slow death march that is August.
Yeah, I try not to come during the summer.
it's a really good move to not come during the summer. It gets depressing because I looked at the long-term forecast today and, you know, it goes out 14 days, whatever it is, and now we're solidly in the mid to upper 80s every day. That means it's over. Spring is over.
Oh, no.
So I'm glad you picked a good weekend to be here.
Seize the opportunity. Right.
Absolutely.
Right?
Well, so we're tasting some of the wines here.
Yes.
And as you mentioned, this is one that if people are familiar with the winery, very likely this is the one that they are going to associate with the winery.
Yeah. We're tasting our 2016 dry Riesling, which truly speaks of our terroir on Cuca Lake. We have a lot of shale in the soil, which brings out this lovely minerality, this a more austere style from a more acidic soil. Very, very food friendly. It has just a wisp of residual sweetness balanced by that lovely natural acidity. Little hints of lime zest on the nose, but that lovely minerality really, really speaking of the earth where it's grown.
Yeah, very much like a graphite-y pencil shaving kind of note on
exactly.
this.
Yeah, exactly. And consistently wonderful accolades, gold medals, this 90 points from Parker. Wine and Spirits magazine actually just named us an all-star brand for 2018, one of 50 brands that they describe as names to know in 2018 based on the high scores that many of our wines have achieved.
Let me ask you this, Barbara. Now I think we're going to have one more white wine after this one in just a second, but is there a similar approach that you all take to making white wines? Obviously, light on the oak seems to definitely be a case, looking for a bright acidity.
Cool fermentations. Okay. We really want to retain that freshness. We want to really hold the hand of nature here. We really want the vines to express our vineyard, mm-hmm. our climate, our soil. We don't use any additives. Because we're a cool region, only very, very low sulfite levels are needed because it's pH dependent,
sure.
related.
Yep.
So that gives our wines a freshness, a natural quality, mm-hmm. To the wines. But yeah, we really like the vineyards to do most of the work, and we just help that along in the winery.
Great. Now, mm-hmm. with some of these two that we're tasting, obviously, you know, white wines that are vibrant, I'll use that word.
Yes.
We're tasting the 16s. They're obviously drinking really nicely. Are you going to be hanging with the 16s for a while because these are showing
the 16s,
nicely? You get away with some aging on these?
Yes, we do have. We also produce our semi-dry Riesling, which we source from the Seneca Vineyard. And yeah, our current releases.
This is
a reserve Riesling. We don't have the semi-dry here today, but that's also very popular. And with the semi-dry, you get more of the stone fruits, more of a luscious quality, because the soil there is a richer soil, a warmer climate. This is our Reserve Riesling 2016. This is more of an Auslese style. And what I mean by that is we actually are picking some of the raisined berries, raisin from the active botrytis, mm-hmm. And imparting that lovely classic honeyed and cinnamon note on the nose.
Wow.
So this has about 5% residual sweetness versus 0.5% on the dry.
Yes.
So we're really going from dry to very sweet, and then the semi-dry is about 2.5%.
Okay.
But with the reserve, it does have that sweetness, but it has about 11% alcohol and a nice vibrant acidity, so it cuts through some of that sweetness. So this you could pair with a spicier dish or with a more pungent cheese,
sure.
or just by itself.
Yeah, it's a nice porch sipper, right, on a hot,
yeah.
Hot summer day.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly what springs to mind, as you said, is something spicy Indian food,
mm-hmm.
is going to,
sure.
go really nicely with this.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, and I find that with, you're saying that at 5% residual sugar, that's a nice level, right? Because the acidity does punch through at the end.
Yes.
And the finish is the acid. The finish,
yeah,
is not
is
that,
yeah.
kind of syrupy, cloying,
exactly.
sweetness that you often get,
right.
on this. This, mm-hmm. is a very lovely wine.
Thank
as
you.
Well. Absolutely.
Not made every year. The vineyard has to cooperate, especially when it comes
with
to the late,
sure.
harvest,
okay.
right, with the botrytis and the reserve wines.
So, Barbara,
yeah.
do you all do, to achieve that, do you wave picking then in the vineyard? Do you get some of the stuff a little bit earlier, and then you wave for some of the later hanging fruit?
It depends. It depends on the vineyard, depends on the actual site within the vineyard, depends on the vintage. So it really depends.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
gotcha. Now, how many people do you have working at the winery, typically?
Well, that varies quite a
sure,
bit.
Seasonal, sure,
we have, my brother is our president. My niece is our fourth generation. She's our general manager. My cousin is our vineyard manager, and he worked directly with his father, who worked directly with Dr. Frank, my
okay.
grandfather. And then we have a team of internationally trained winemakers. And then, of course, seasonally, that... we have a wonderful sales team, marketing team,
tasting room
sure.
staff.
Okay. Year round, we offer a wonderful range of tasting options from what we call our 1886 experience, which is where we make our sparkling wines, a natural fieldstone winery next door to Dr. Frank's, where we're actually offering special wines paired with small plates, and then we have a reserve tasting experience, and then our general tasting. So we really are able to. Appeal to a wide range of palates and customers.
Sure, gotcha. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the questions I always like to ask in this instance, and I mean, certainly the Finger Lakes has been an established wine region for a while, but
yes.
I think more of us are discovering the region in recent years,
yes,
and even
sure.
very recent
mm-hmm.
years, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Is it such that, is everybody on the same page? Are your neighbors, other wineries on the same page?
Good question.
For the most part.
Good question.
I know there's always people that are
actually,
not.
Grapes have been grown in the Finger Lakes since the 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, they were mainly the native grapes. So Concord, Catawba, Delaware, you know, things where you might enjoy on your breakfast toast, but we wouldn't be discussing the wonderful food pairability options. Fast forwarding a bit from the 1800s, there were some hybrid called French hybrids that were being grown. These are crosses of the European or vinifera grape species,
yep.
with the native grapes. But it's very difficult to achieve the high quality levels of the vinifera unless you've got the vinifera.
You've got it, yes.
So we were the first to grow the vinifera. And my grandfather felt that Americans deserve the best of everything, and that was what he chose to pursue. And felt that the climate and soil would be suitable.
Finding and going with the varietals that are going to perform
exactly.
Given your terroir. Which
exactly.
It's always a mistake that many yes. regions make as they try and force feed Cabernet Sauvignon or Chardonnay into an area where it won't work.
Right.
Because they think they're supposed to. So things like Riesling, like we're talking about
right.
here,
yeah.
going to perform well
yes.
with the cooling, the lake effect that you get. And
although we do produce some really wonderful reds as well. I
mean, yeah,
we,
sure.
We,
like as, Cab Franc, I
Cab
think,
Franc
as well
Cab
there.
Cab Franc, Cab Sauv, too, and
yeah.
Pinot Noir.
I'm thinking about our neighbors, like in Texas,
yes,
for example.
Sure.
Who you see this uh-huh. in the 20, 25 years of modern winemaking in Texas.
Right.
They started out very wrong and have now started to finally figure out what does well
yes.
there.
Yes, it takes time.
It
definitely
time.
Takes
yes,
time. As far as the whole region, I mean, this is a very unique viticultural area. These lakes were formed during the glacial period, so they're very deep, and that's what allows us to grow these more tender varieties. I think the whole quality of the region has improved over the years. There are still some quite a few growers that are still focusing on the native grapes, and there are customers who still love those wines.
And that's what they connect with, sure.
It does cover a number. The region really appeals to a very wide audience,
great.
Customer base,
yes.
consumer base.
Yes,
yeah.
There we go.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's do this, Barbara. We're going to take
yep.
another break here
right.
on the show. We're going to come
mm-hmm.
back. We have a couple more wines mm-hmm. to taste, I
mm-hmm.
believe.
Yes.
Which I am looking forward to chat a little bit more about Dr. Constantine Frank Winery, a little bit more about the Finger Lakes, and then we're going to get Barbara on the road because she's got places to go, people to see, Jazz Fest to hit up, and all that good stuff. So, friends, we're going to take a little break here on the Nola Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Come on back.
Ladies, are you looking for wine to bring to your next girls' night out? Grab a bottle of Capitello wines and enjoy the taste of fruit from Oregon's Willamette Valley. Capitello has a wide variety of wines to choose from. Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, dessert wine, and a Brut Sparkling that's a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He'll even stop by next time he's in town. So grab the girls, have fun, and enjoy Capitello wine. Cheers.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner, the Black Duck features over 120 rums as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Bageau heads up the small plates and charcuterie kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
Chicken and a chocolate cake. I'll bring a little home food to keep awake. Now hurry, hurry, for goodness sake. Cause yes, I'm coming and so is Sue. A crawfish is jumping in the big bayou. I'll bring some bait for the crawfish line. I'll bring your gal and I'll bring mine.
Crawfish! 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 Hey, La Bash and meet me on the big bayou.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning in today, friends. As you know, we are chatting with Barbara Frank, who is from Dr. Constantine Frank Winery. They're in upstate New York in the Finger Lakes, a very fine wine region that we continue to learn more about, I think, at least in New Orleans and elsewhere. If you're listening, wherever you're listening to the podcast, go seek these wines out. They're fantastic. Now what we've moved into, Barbara, you mentioned that, so you're now the consulting winemaker, and one of your focus areas is the bubbles.
The bubbles,
and
yes.
And so we've moved into a sparkling rosé here.
Yes, yes. So for over 30 years, my immediate family has been handcrafting world-class sparkling wines, all in the traditional method champenoise. Recently, we decided to merge the brand names, and so all of our sparkling wines will be labeled as the Dr. Frank, under the Dr. Frank label. Historically, they were called Chateau Franc and are produced right next door to Dr. Frank's in one of the oldest wine-making buildings in the country, dating back to 1886, of natural field stone. So it creates a perfect aging environment for our vintage sparklers, which we're giving about 4 to 5 years on the yeast. For the vintage sparklers, we are using the classic French Champagne Trio, Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and Pinot Meunier. Then we also are producing some non-vintage sparklers, a little more fruit-forward, a little more residual sweetness. And one of them is our Célèbre Rosé, which is a blend of Pinot Noir and Pinot Meunier. And then we also do a Célèbre Cremant, which is 100% Riesling.
Oh, interesting.
All
okay.
have won numerous gold medals. Our vintage sparklers, the Blanc de Blanc and Blanc de Noir, were named Year's Best U.S. Sparkling in Wine and Spirits magazine. Our Brut was named one of 11 top sparklers under $30 in the wine Wine Spectator, and we were the only domestic sparkler to be in that short list.
Oh, wow, that's great.
Twice named Best New World Sparkling Wine, twice served at the White House. We felt by creating a sparkling wine, we would have the perfect climate and ideal soil, and that's why we decided to do that.
This one shows very nicely. So you said this is a blend of Pinot Noir and Pinot Meunier.
And Pinot Meunier, yes.
Okay, great.
And non-vintage.
Non-vintage, mm-hmm. and then it's a sparkling rosé, as we're talking about, so just that limited amount of skin contact, mm-hmm. right? I'm guessing a mm-hmm. few hours. Is that correct?
It really depends.
Okay. Sure. Gotcha.
Yes.
Fair enough. Uh-huh. And then, and you mentioned that one of the things that jumped out at me right away is and it's very well balanced. There's mm-hmm. a bit of sweetness
yes.
on it, so a bit of RS on
it. A little RS, but of course that lovely, natural, vibrant acidity to balance it. Yeah, this is about 2% residual.
Okay, right. Yeah. Interesting. It mm-hmm. actually shows, I would have guessed, slightly higher, to
oh,
be
really?
Honest.
Okay.
And
mm-hmm.
in a good way, don't get
yes.
me wrong, because
yeah.
it balances uh-huh. very, very nicely. One of the mm-hmm. things that jumps out to me also about it is, I'm going to go kind of cliche uh-huh. here, but since I was just reading about the fried chicken festival that's uh-huh. going to be happening again this year down here. Fried chicken with a little bit of heat to it.
Sure.
You say like a Nashville-style fried chicken, this is going to go really well with that,
yes.
I think.
Yes, I think so. And our sparkling Riesling as well would cut through some of that richness of the
Does that have uh-huh. a similar level of residual sugar
that
also?
That actually goes up a little bit.
Higher?
That's about 3%.
Okay.
Whereas with our vintage sparklers, the Brut, the Blanc de Blanc, the Blanc de Noir, those are all drier, less than 1%, under 1% residual.
Gotcha. Okay. This is lovely. And so,
thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you guys, is this a pretty consistent product in the line now?
Yes. Although, actually, having said that, the Célèbre Rosé, we are actually coming out with a Brut Rosé for this month, in fact. So it really depends on the year.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. And so how many sparklings, did you say this? How many sparklings do you generally make ballpark in a given year?
Yeah, about five different sparklers, but all handcrafted, all very limited production.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. I was going to have you get right back up in the
sorry.
Mic, but that's right. So now your interest, Barbara, in sparkling wine in particular, mm-hmm. was this because you grew up around it, obviously, and took a shine to
was this
a trip to Champagne or something?
A lot of different. It's what I focused on. I have a graduate degree in enology.
Where did you go to school?
I went Cornell undergrad, then Geisenheim for a year in Germany, and then Cal State Fresno for my master's.
Which is a very good program, by the way.
At the time, there were only two, just Davis and
Fresno.
I wanted a more practical approach, so I chose Fresno. And I worked for a number of sparkling wine houses while I was out there. I did my master's thesis with Domaine Chandon. Did an internship at Domaine Mum, at now Mum Napa, and did a crush at Schramsberg, and then worked as an assistant winemaker at S. Anderson in Yountville.
Sure. Yep.
And then actually did a little stint as a national rep for Bill Cart-Simon Champagne.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. So that's
visited,
a pretty good well-rounded resume in the world of sparkling.
And visited, right. Visited with the family, stayed with them for about a week. And then actually prior to that, when I was working at Mum, we had the consultant come from the Champagne House, Mum Champagne, and also at S. Anderson, we had a consultant from Bruinart. It was a great, great learning experience.
Wonderful. Excellent. Well, we've moved to red, so we're tasting one red today, which is the Cabernet Franc that we were talking
Cabernet
about
Franc.
Before. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about this one, 2015.
Yes, 2015, a great year for the reds. With our reds, because we are a cooler region, we actually go through the vineyard and remove about half of the fruit. And that has the effect of focusing the energy of the vines into those remaining clusters, so we're able to get a really nice, fully ripened grape, imparting this lovely character of the variety. Cabernet Franc has become very important for us in New York, not only in the Finger Lakes, Long Island, Hudson Valley. It actually ripens a little earlier than Cabernet Sauvignon, right. Although we can make a wonderful right. Cab Sauv. In fact, a few years back, we had a Cab Sauv win a gold in San Francisco.
Okay.
We can't
like
do it every year.
Yeah, sure. Gotcha.
And certainly a more limited production. But with that careful cluster thinning, we can produce some world-class reds. Cab Franc is a great go-to red. The tannin's a little more restrained than the Cab Sauv, a nice bright acidity, some lovely herbal notes. So it has great food pairability. You could mm-hmm. pair it with a red sauce, to a steak, to a grilled tuna, a swordfish.
You know, I was going to say, Barbara, that with a couple things that jump out at me about this wine, you mentioned the tannic structure, which is very nice. And I think sometimes, especially Cab Francs, the tannins will be overly grippy or
yes.
they'll be very green.
Yes.
And
yes,
this doesn't perhaps. Demonstrate that at all. And also, I was thinking when you said that about thicker, heartier fish, like a swordfish steak, mm-hmm. tuna steak, mm-hmm. even salmon, I think would be a very
oh,
nice
yes.
pairing
yeah.
with this as well.
And it can also...
Salmon with capers for
yeah,
some reason.
Yeah, beautiful.
A salty note.
And yeah, that sounds great. And also... it can handle some heat. It can handle a spicier
yeah,
dish.
Yeah, yeah.
So it fits in well with the food.
Yeah, a little bit
where
of a pepper rub on a nice steak
sure.
and that kind of thing.
Yep.
Well, Barbara, do me a favor. We've got about 2 minutes left uh-huh. before we got to close out. Tell people yeah. where they can find information about Dr. Frank Constantine Winery online
yes.
and so
yes,
on.
Yes, absolutely. We have a great website that we're constantly updating, and you can reach us at www.drfrankwines.com. We are open year-round, and I know it's a bit of a trek, but during the summer you might want a little break from the heat and the humidity, and we'd love to have you come up and visit.
That's great. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Friends, that was Barbara Frank from Dr. Frank Constantine Winery. Go check them out. Some lovely wines. You can find them in various locations around the market, and I have a sneaky suspicion you're going to be seeing more of these wines in the market as well. Want to give a special thanks to my good friend Kaylin Morgan here, general manager of the Martin Wine Cellar here in Mandeville, for hosting us today. Come check them out. It is a fine, fine wine shop, and as I like to say, it's probably the best bar on the North Shore, even though it's not really a bar. Don't let the PR company get a hold of that, Kaylin. But friends, we're going to take a little break here on the show. When we come back, we're going to be chatting with Sal and Matt, the beer guys. All right, everybody, come on back.
Looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Hi, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy, suggesting that great handcrafted Pinot Noir from Oregon doesn't need to be expensive. Consider Yamhill Valley Vineyard Estate Pinot Noir from the oldest family estate in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. It's rich, ripe, wonderfully balanced, and it's only about $20 at your favorite New Orleans wine shop. Yamhill Valley Vineyard. Top quality doesn't need to be expensive if you know what to drink. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
Tim McNally, welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Yeah, if you're listening to the first half of the show, friends, you know we are here talking beers with Sal and Matt, the official beer correspondents of the NOLA Drink Show. And as we always like to say, it's an unpaid position, gentlemen. But thank you for being here on your dime.
Thanks. Glad to be back. It's always a good time, Brian.
Yeah, it's always good to see you. So to be clearer, we are chatting with Sal Mortilaro and Matt Horney, mm-hmm. both of which are certified beer judges. And we'll get to this in a second. We have a certified mead judge now in our midst.
Yes.
We're going to have to rein that one in a little bit.
Yes.
And then Matt Horney is also the brewmaster here at Old Rail Brewing Company, where we are recording this. So, Matt, thanks for hosting us again today.
Absolutely. Thanks, Brian. Thanks for having us. And we're actually recording today in the brewery.
Yeah, we're actually in the brewery. We figured that it would be a nicer aesthetic, and we're actually closer to the beer.
We are. We're very close. It's right behind Sal.
That's right. Yes. If my glass gets empty, I'm going to go ahead and just reach behind me and undo the tap and fill her back up.
And do it. I like it. We were thinking, this is really what I was thinking, guys, is it was convenience. I purported that it would be aesthetic.
Way to plan
but this
ahead.
Is, yeah. Thank you, man. I appreciate that. I'm a lazy guy, so I think being as close to the beer as possible was a good move. And we were talking about this before we just started recording a second ago, where I said, oh, what do we want to talk about first? And I said, I don't know. What do you guys want to talk about? How about this? Let's throw this out in this direction, because we were talking about how here we are in, well, technically spring in southeast Louisiana, but yeah, it's yeah. over. Spring's over. Mm-hmm. We're on that long, slow death march to August, so we're sitting, all three of us got beers, and all three of us are having a Pilsner.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like a good place to start.
It is.
It's almost a Pilsner party.
It is almost a Pilsner party. So we were talking about that, too. We're going to get into this topic. Well, let's get into this topic since you yeah. mentioned it. Matt, you were talking about a trip that you just took. You went up to the Craft Brewers trade
yeah.
show.
Yeah, the Craft Brewers Conference.
Uh-huh. In Nashville.
In Nashville. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that just finished up last Friday. It's a week-long thing. And basically, it's trade show seminars and a big gathering of some of the best brewers and new brewers and everybody from around the country. So mm-hmm. you just hope that place is safe, because we can't afford to lose any of those brewers. They're all there.
Yeah, everybody. nobody stays behind, like when it's the State of the Union address where they
right, yeah,
one person
right,
behind in case they drop a bomb on the conference.
Yeah.
Never really thought about that way. Somebody who's very anti, well, this is where we're going to go. This somebody who's very anti-IPA could have taken out the whole trend with one drop of a bomb.
Oh, gosh,
so,
yeah.
Go ahead, let's elaborate on that, what yeah. we're talking about here, you know, because you went up yeah. there and it was a lot of New England style IPAs yeah. seem to be going on.
You know, some of the best in the country are there. Bearded Iris, for one. We were talking about that earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Very happening place during the past week.
And they're out of Nashville, right?
Out of Nashville. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We kind of kick things off over at Southern Grist, which has a new location on the kind of the northwest side of Nashville. And great place, very nice. Great beers, amazing. Yeah, they're doing a really, really great job there. So Nashville's got, I mean, there's some other breweries around there too, and they're just kind of killing it.
Yeah, is it a pretty up and coming scene where yeah. a lot of these places are new and mm-hmm.
yeah, and there's okay. some ones that have been around for a long time. Tennessee Beer Works and places like that, and down kind of in central downtown area.
Mm-hmm.
There's quite a few breweries you can hit up on foot, you know,
oh,
in one
okay.
central area. So a lot of stuff happened though.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things that you mentioned before we started taping, you guys, Matt said this, and we were talking about all these trends towards IPAs. You actually had to engineer a Pilsner party.
Yes, we did.
Because you were trying to find a Pilsner.
We were. It was hot, and we had our share of New England IPAs, as everybody's going to do when you get there. You kind of want to seek out those kind of those trendy things, and well, we certainly got them. And after that, we wanted a good old refreshing, clean, crisp Pilsner. We couldn't find any, and in the area of town we couldn't find any, and so we decided that we would have our own Pilsner party. So the Wrecking Bar Brewery in Atlanta, Georgia, my good friend Neil Engelman, Gavin McKenna from Red Brick in Atlanta, we got together at their place, and they had their Pilsner, we had ours, and we had a Pilsner party. We did.
Well, Sal, what do you think about this? I mean, we were talking about this whole idea of trendy beers, and you know, that's all fine and good, nothing wrong with that, but the New England style IPA seems to be the thing.
I got to admit, you know, they have grown on me. When they first came out, I wasn't that much of a fan of them, but they have grown on me. Those who know me know that I'm not really an IPA person per mm-hmm. se. But however, there was really nice soft notes of the New England style IPAs. But, you know, talking about Pilsners, talking about lagers, these traditional styles, they really don't get the love that they deserve. A lot of people think of them as very boring. However, though, there is a very, very good craft. It shows the quality of a brewer when you make these very clean, these very traditional style beers, especially in the case of lagers. You have these very clean beers that no off flavors, no off aromas, yeah, technical or, you know, can hide behind.
Yeah, so, we've talked about that before, where the faults are going to show in those
absolutely.
Beers much more.
Absolutely.
Well, and we've kind of been, as we know, here in this country anyway, mm-hmm. on this IPA kick really for a good number of years now, driving a lot of the craft beer market in particular. Mm-hmm. But now we seem to be on this very, you know, this inner circle of that with the New England IPAs.
Sure.
So tell people, let's just contrast, say, a West Coast style IPA and a New England style IPA so people know what we're talking about.
So what your West Coast style IPAs are going to be, or these are going to be your IPAs out of, for example, probably one of the bigger known houses is going to be Stone Brewing. They're going to be these very bitter, very piney, very in your face, slap you in the mouth with IBUs or international bittering units, to where they try to pack as much bitterness in it as possible. There'll be a little bit of sweetness in there from the use of the malt to kind of help balance that out. But as a whole, it's very IBU driven. Your East Coast IPAs, your New England style IPAs, if you will, these are going to be a lot softer beers. It's not going to really focus as much on the IBU, the amount of the IBUs, the amount of bitterness, perceived bitterness, but it's really going to focus on those soft hop flavors. The techniques that they use are a little bit different as far as what they call the hopping schedule, along with some water chemistry and some other things. But without getting all of that dorky stuff, these are going to be a lot softer as far as bitterness, but a lot of hop flavor in these. Mm-hmm. It's going to focus more on that hop flavor than anything.
And we get more of like a juicy fruit note, right?
Yeah, more juicy fruit. You have Heady Topper is probably one of the more original, well-known New England style IPAs, but then of course places like Treehouse and other breweries along those lines have come out and really kind of pushed them and made them what they are.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Well, and Matt, we got about two mm-hmm. minutes, you guys, before we need to take the first break. But I think we touched on this a little bit before, but let's talk about why does the water matter in that style between, you know, contrasting styles of mm-hmm. IPA.
So in your West Coast IPA, you get into you have your calcium chloride,
okay.
sulfate, and a high sulfate content accentuates bitterness, hop bitterness. So the higher it is, up to, you know, 200, 250 parts per million of that, you're getting into some big promotion of those bitter hop notes from
okay.
the hops.
So it's amplifying bitterness. Gotcha. Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so in New England IPAs, you don't want that. So you drop your sulfate comes way down. And you focus on softness, so you're focusing on the chloride more so than you are
okay.
Your sulfate.
Now, are people having to manage their water in New England to make that happen, or is that just the way the river waters and stuff typically are?
You're probably going to be adjusting it.
Okay, mm-hmm. But not nearly as much, right? The raw material is a little more akin to that, or
you know, I don't know what their profiles are, but I'm going to guess that in most larger breweries nowadays, when you're getting into those kind of beers, you're either using reverse osmosis and you're stripping your water and starting clean, or you have a deionization water filtration system like we do here, and that strips it down the same way, and then you're building it back up, because that gives you true control over what's happening in your water. And so then you can just kind of focus on chloride and
and
keeping that water have that. It gives a fullness, I guess, is the best way that...
Like a kind of a mouthfeel consideration?
Yeah, it's like a round, round, full mouthfeel. Mm-hmm.
All right, well, you guys, let's do this. Let's take a little break here on the show. We're going to be back. We're chatting with Sal and Matt. We're talking beers. We're going to talk seasonal beers, talk about an event coming up that you can check out, and all kinds of other things, friends. We're going to take a break here on the Nola Drink Show. Come on back.
Oh, drank my beer while I was in the rear. Tell me who drank my beer while I was in the rear.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best-kept secrets in wine today, Miro Cellars.
Looking to shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street, or go to our website, drinklabnola.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning into the Nola Drink Show, friends, today. Pleased, as always, to be chatting with Matt Horney and Sal Mortilaro here, our beer experts. You guys, we do this about once a quarter, it seems, you guys, so you're now fully ensconced as the beer experts here on the show. I don't talk beer with anyone else, as a matter of fact. They all pale in comparison. But we were talking about something really interesting during the break, as we do, and we can obviously go down any number of rabbit holes here and get pretty technical. We were kind of calibrating how to have this conversation. But Matt, you were mentioning, and I think this is very interesting, this chloride sulfate ratio when making IPAs, and we touched on why that works a little bit before, but there was a sort of standard formula. It almost reminds me of how people make simple syrup, their sugar to water ratio. But
So in the circles online, you'll come across a chloride to sulfate ratio. Some people will attest that this doesn't mean anything. Some people will swear by it. So where the jury is on that, it's still kind of in question. But it is something that a rule of thumb a lot of brewers did use, still use today. I used it in some of the earlier IPAs. It just made good sense because it allowed me consistency. It was just a good place to start. And it's always good to just try something. If you come across it, you know, homebrew it, see what it does. And, you know, that was the great thing about homebrewing. You know, we learned from other homebrewers. We get to try it, see what it does to our beer. And if we like it, that's all that matters. But the long short of it is that you had a chloride sulfate ratio. So if you were shooting for 200 parts per million of sulfate, you would do 100 parts per million of chloride.
Now, and we were talking about, so the, if I had this right, so the sulfate, that's going to drive the bitterness more, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that comes from, so the Burton water was high in sulfates. That was the English water, I believe. Well, I know, but I believe that was about, you know, it was upwards in the 200s, really high sulfates.
And that, so that's that British IPA style that we're talking about here. Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that water, it got really high in sulfates. It got exceedingly high. And in some cases, it can alter the flavor of the beer. But coming back to the IPA, you know, 250 to 200 worked really well for the West Coast. And then, you know, like in my case, when I was brewing Pliny clones back in the day, it would be about 80 parts per million chloride and 250 parts per million of sulfate.
And that's a pretty extreme level right there. What they're talking about Pliny. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're trying Pliny to just younger. Maximize the IBUs on that as much as we could. And then when you get to these New England IPAs, then it's a whole different game. And it's like, you know, this water chemistry is just totally what I believe would be manufactured. And, you know, that's what, you know, stripping this water allows us to do, is rebuild it the way that we want to alter the flavor that you're probably not going to find normally, which is, you might find it in some waters. You're going to have some neutral waters. I know the Atlanta water profile was pretty simple and you could build it up from there. In our case, we can't do that with the Mandeville water. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you bring those levels down almost near equal for a New England IPA.
Okay.
So,
well, and Sal, I think what we're getting at here too, and this is what we're talking about during the break, is that we were seeing that West Coast profile of these very hoppy, very bitter IPAs kind of driving the trend in the larger market in the country. And so I'm speculating that's why these people gravitated towards that water model. And kind of that's how that style started to drive the ship first. And now we see that New England style kind of, I don't know, becoming more popular. Is
sure.
that fair to say?
Right, yeah. So you have, for example, one of the first, back it up just a little bit, instead of the IPAs or the India Pale Ales, one of the first most well-known hoppy beers, if you will, Pale Ale, was Sierra Nevada. Yep. With their Pale Ale. Mm-hmm. People, I guess, crave that bitterness. People are masochists and they just liked having their palates wrecked.
Honestly, Sal, I grew up drinking that. I went to the brewery when it was still in the original building in Chico.
Absolutely.
And that's everybody when I was in college, it was that.
And, you know, it really kind of started people on these, you know, they went from Pale Ales, right, to India Pale Ales, places like Stone, like I said, we talked about them out of Escondido, California, really capitalized on that trend. And again, Sierra Nevada Pale Ale was arguably probably one of the first craft beers out there.
Yeah.
That was widely available.
Yeah.
They just capitalized on that. Hey, this is good. This is bitter. We've never had anything like it. And people wanted a little bit more. And that really kind of drove that that West Coast style. And then people, I guess, being rebels, wanted to try something a little bit different. Everything you know is wrong. Mm-hmm. They wanted to play with your mind and say, hey, this is what you think IPA is, but we're gonna play with you.
Damn,
and say,
you,
this
West
is
Coast.
This is now an IPA, and East Coast, West Coast, kind of thing. You know, Biggie Smalls or Tupac. I guess it depends. You know what you like,
right,
but same kind of beef, I guess.
There was a beef right there. Well done, man. That was excellent. So I think that kind of answers that question. And then just for people listening out there, knowing, I think, the background and kind of what was driving the trend, and now we see the New England IPAs being incredibly popular. It's like the beer, the flavor of the month kind of thing. But since we are in these hotter weather times right now, we touched on Pilsner a little bit, but like we were talking about Kolsch, right? Let's talk about a couple. Let's go with that one. Let's talk about Kolsch a little bit.
Yeah, so the Kolsch beer, probably one of the most well-known, arguably, is going to be out of San Arnold Brewing out of Houston, Texas, their lawnmower beer. The Kolsch style has its origins, even though it's not a... we talked about lagers real quick. Kolsch is not a lager per se, because of the type of yeast they use and the temperature in which they ferment it at. You're going to get these very clean, very well attenuated beers that are going to be a little bit fruity, a little bit of wheat in the grist, the malt grist, depending on who's making it. But the St. Arnold is literally called St. Arnold's Lawnmower, and it's one of these... very refreshing beers that after you're done cutting the grass and you need a beer, you know,
right,
that's
right.
Something that you're going to gravitate and drink to. I'm a fan of the Kolsch style as a whole. I actually had a pretty good Kolsch a few weeks ago at a local restaurant, a Mexican restaurant, and I was pretty impressed by it, in all honesty. Port Orleans puts out a Mexican lager called the Dorado, and it was like... one of the bigger light Mexican lagers, but with some craft umph in it. Had a little bit of a lemony note to it. It was a little bit heavier in the body, and it was actually pretty good. So, yeah, as we move into this hotter weather, you're going to try to gravitate towards these beers. In fact, Matt just put out a very lovely, kind of bringing it all together, nice summer beers. They just brought out their New England IPA. I think it's coming in at 5.6%.
Yeah, the one we just tapped. Yeah. Yeah, we just tapped that on Friday. It seems...
Way to ride the bandwagon, Matt. Good job.
Yeah,
man.
Well, you know.
No, go on. Sorry.
We do.
You got to make money, man.
Yeah,
you're in business,
right?
You know?
Well, That's true.
We're not going to go to the Venn diagram. That's a story for another time.
Yeah, right. Oh, my God. Don't get me started. No, but yeah, we did. And, you know, we've been putting out coalescence and things like that. And Don't Forget the Flowers. And this time we kind of took it up to another level and we went big on our dry hops. And for us, with our tanks and the tank geometry that we have, trying to get the hops to go into solution was the biggest problem I was having. A little playing around with that and experimentation on coalescence and Don't Forget the Flowers and some of the other beers, the Eurythmic. I think we dialed it in on the last batch and we were able to get those hops to fall into solution. So we went big on that. And yeah, it's a lower ABV, which is kind of nice because it packs the hot punch, light on the bitterness, but just full on the body, really nice rounded mouthfeel. And you get that from the water chemistry. And then the amount of hops that are in there is just, and we'll grab one of those in a little bit. And
you can
get into that.
I won't say no.
Yeah. But we are on the bandwagon.
Yeah, hey, you got to be, right?
We haven't fallen off
yet. You got to make what people want.
Well, that's the thing. You know, we always talk about that here, and what we do at this brewery is that we try and do everything. You try and do everything, and you try and do it well. And, you know, we got a Doppelbach kind of hanging out in the serving tank, and we'll give that a try later, too, if y'all want to. But, you know, we've run the styles.
Yeah.
And some of them we do to style, some we play with, like the beer we're having right now.
Yeah, I do like, and we got to take a break here, you guys, in just a second. One of the things I like that you do here, Matt, very well, is that you will do something and then you'll come back to it and refine it and come back to it and refine it. And you see that happen, and it delivers a very fine program across the board. Let's take a little break here, guys. We'll come back. We're going to talk a little bit more about seasonal beer. We're going to get into some mead. We got a certified mead judge sitting here with us, so we got to make sure we don't ignore that. And we'll talk about more with beer and mead and all that good stuff. Chatting with Sal and Matt here, our unpaid beer correspondents here on the NOLA Drink Show. We're going to take a little break. Come on back.
This is Kevin Richards with New Orleans' own Sazerac Company, makers of Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In case you haven't noticed, rye whiskey is hot, flying off store shelves and dominating the bar scene in New Orleans and around the country. Rye's spicy and assertive character is drawing in those looking for whiskey with a bite, but that equally pairs well with cocktails. Enjoy it in cocktails like the Old Fashioned or Manhattan, or simply savor it on the rocks. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc, a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint. And it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc. Cheers.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Yeah, friends, we're sitting here at Old Rail Brewing Company in Old Mandeville, right here on Girard Street, right by the trailhead. Great beer place. Please be joined by my friends Sal Mordilaro and Matt Horney. And hey, we're chatting beer, and we're going to get into mead in just a second. But let's just circle back just for a couple minutes here, Matt. We're talking about seasonal beers. We touched on Lager, Kolsch, Pilsner a little bit. Talked a lot about IPAs. Lovely Saison, which you do a great job with always.
Thank you.
You've got a new one out, or this iteration out.
Yep.
It's great.
Yep. This is a new one. This is 3/4 the speed of life. It's a strawberry white pepper saison. What we did on this, we didn't go super huge on the strawberry and didn't go super huge on the white pepper. We tried to preserve the style, the flavors, the nuances of the saison itself. So you kind of get that crispness, you get that little kind of a little tinge of tartness in it. Then it goes into the subtle strawberry. It was just enough to kind of change the color a little bit. It's there. The white pepper is like a funky pepper. It's spicy, but it's not as spicy as black pepper. So we wanted that kind of funky weirdness from the white pepper to get in there, and that kind of enhances the spiciness of the Saison yeast.
How do you achieve, and just so people know, I think people know this because most people understand this, that listen to this show, you're not literally putting white pepper in there.
We are.
Oh, you are? Oh, you are. Yeah. Oh, I thought this was just the notes you were trying to achieve.
No, we used some white pepper in the boil kettle, and then when we transferred over the serving tank, we actually toasted some white pepper, crush it,
okay,
and then put that in the tank as well.
Very interesting. Yeah. I've learned something here today. Yeah. That's always cool. It's a really refreshing beer. It's really nice. It's got a very nice mouthfeel too. What are your thoughts real quick on this one, Sal, on the Saison?
I loved it. You know, balance is a key element in all beers, unless you're going for a crazy West Coast IPA, right? Trying to slap yourself in the mouth.
Right, right.
I've had it twice before, and I was super thrilled with it when it came out. I thought it was well balanced, very drinkable, very nice beer.
Yeah, it's really lovely. Well, let's do this, you guys. So we've talked about how you both are certified beer judges with the BJCP. Did I get that right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, I'm going to make sure I get the letter ordering right. And Sal, you recently, you are the only certified mead judge now in the entire state of Louisiana, if I understand correctly.
Yes, I am the first and only certified mead judge in Louisiana. So what happens I went to Austin in January to take the mead judge certification test. One of the things that the BJCP does, along with beer, they also do mead and cider. Their cider program is in the works and forthcoming.
Okay,
but
that's
the
cool.
The mead program has been around for a couple of years. Went out and took the exam and ended up finding out about 2 weeks ago that I passed it. It was a very rigorous exam, set up very similar to the way that the beer judge side is set up, as far as the online entrance and then the tasting portion, the same setup. So got that, and it's pretty good to go.
That's cool. So, and just really quickly, so it's a there's some technical knowledge. You do some blind tasting, I'm assuming, right?
Yes. So what they'll do is they'll bring out, very similar to the beer portion, they will bring out several meads, and it is all blind tasting. Mm-hmm. They may be the straight respective styles. They may be flawed. They may call it one, but it's really the other. Mm-hmm. And you have to basically call it for what it is, and if there's any technical flaws or stylistic flaws, diagnose those things and what makes them wrong or right, and how to bring them back into style.
Gotcha.
But, you know, mead is one of those things, for those who don't know, the basic element of mead is that honey is the main fermentable. It's essentially honey, water, and yeast. And mead is a lot more complex and in-depth than a lot of people think. Most people think of mead, they particularly think of, for example, Chaucer's mead, where it's going to be right. What's called a sack-strength mead, mm-hmm. A sweet sack-strength mead. To where it's just very cloying, very sweet, a lot of residual sugar in it. But that's not really all that mead is. It's the most widespread, so a lot of people have this thought that that's what it is.
And that's that old, more rustic style where it originates from,
sure,
right?
Sure, absolutely. But, you know, you have these ones. There's different levels of sweetness and carbonation and alcohol strength. But with mead, you can get anywhere from a sparkling, the amount of carbonation, a sparkling dry mead, only a little bit of residual sugar left in it, that is sack strength above 15% alcohol. So it pushes more along the lines of champagne.
Okay.
Also as well, what's very cool about mead is that a lot of people don't realize that there's all kinds of various honey varietals out there. Alfalfa is going to get you this very waxy style. Orange blossom honey is going to get you this very floral, perfumey. Guajillo honey, it's very minty, very earthy. Buckwheat honey, treacle pudding, molasses, and you can make any kind of mead with that. Also, something interesting about mead is like saying beer. It's the same term. Mead is the drink as a whole. It's not the specific style. So okay. Within mead, you can even have, for example, a piment, which is a mead where you add grape juice to it. Methogan, where you add various spices and herbs to it. And also braggot, which where you start adding sometimes hops, but malted barley. Hmm. You know, and something that's very interesting about mead, too, is that I would argue it is the official alcohol drink of the state of Louisiana. Because the
where are we going with this, Matt?
The official state insect, the official state insect, is the honeybee.
Okay, there you go. Okay,
and in fact, in our neck of the woods, the Honey Island Swamp area, it was actually noted called the Honey Island Swamp area because of the natural when they came and found that area, they noted the very large natural bee population. Louisiana actually has a strange kind of connection with mead, you know, with the honeybee being the official state insect.
Yeah, I'm going to say Sazerac is the official cocktail of the city of New Orleans. Watch out. I smell an advocacy campaign coming up by Sal here. But well, we got about 2.5 minutes, you guys, before we take a break, and we'll come back, talk a little bit more mead. But let's pick this first one off. Sal, what are we tasting
here?
Sure.
So we've got two meads here. These are going to be both out of two meaderies out of New Hampshire. The first one that we're going to go ahead and taste is called Echoes out of Sap House Meadery. This is going to be a wildflower honey, so you're going to get a very nice floral note, and it's going to be a sweet mead, a good bit of residual sugar, sack strength above 15%, 15.6%, and this one is aged in bullet rye barrels. So you're going to get that very floral, a little spicy. That wood note is definitely in there as well from the use of the barrel. Very nice mead. Again, it goes to show that even though it's a sweet mead, there's a lot you can do with it. Age it just like a beer on wood.
Like you said, I get that wood note, and I get a little bit of that kind of the baking spice note on this as well. And so I'll tell people with mead, I mean, obviously enjoying it neat, if you will, or slightly chilled, right,
sure,
is a good way to do it. Is that? I mean, obviously that's the preferred way to do it. But what would be some other diverse uses for mead?
So these guys, Sap House Meadery, they actually, and I'm going to parlay this, but both Sap House Meadery as well as Moonlight Meadery, they do a mead club to where you can order meads online and have them shipped to you quarterly.
Which I would recommend that everybody go and do that. I know Moonlight might not really appreciate that if everybody does it, but that's some of my favorite mead, and he's been generous enough to share some of that, and I gotta say,
this is excellent.
Yeah. So Sap House is great in regards to they actually send info sheets with their stuff, and they actually give some recipes for mead cocktails, if you will, almost like, because again, you're talking something that's 16%. This could be a little more fortified, you know, in strength. So you can make a nice little cocktail, just like there's beer cocktails, right?
Sure, exactly.
Same situation. They have some good options.
You know what I'm getting on this, you guys? This is, sorry, kind of a tangent here.
Yep.
I'm definitely getting an oxidative note. It has a very sherry-esque character to it.
That's going to be, of course, from the use of the barrel. A little bit of that oxygen gets in there, and exactly correct.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Well, let's do this, you guys. Let's take a little break here. We got one more segment with y'all before we close out the show. We're going to taste another mead and talk a little bit more about this, that, and the other thing. We're going to talk about Larry Fest, which is a very cool event coming up here in a little bit over a month that you're going to want to attend if you live here in this area anyway. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. Come on.
Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine. Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special two-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair it with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu, life is meant to be lived, not endured.
My buck has got a hole in it. I can't buy no beer. Well, I'm standing on a corner with a bucket in my hand. I'm just looking for a woman that ain't got no man. My buck has got a hole in it. Yeah, my buck has got a hole in it. My buck has got a hole in it. I can't buy no beer.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. We are chatting with Sal and Matt. We're talking beers, but now we're actually talking mead and a lovely mead called Echoes, aged in bullet bourbon barrels, and pretty cool stuff. And Sal, we're moving on to another one. What do we got here?
We are. We are moving on to another meadery out of New Hampshire called Moonlight Meadery. They also offer a mead club where every quarter they'll send out meads to you via the mail. Kind of the sad thing in regards to mead in Louisiana is that our closest meaderies are going to be either out of San Antonio. Austin. Out of Austin, thank you.
Yeah, Atlanta,
either out of Austin or out of Atlanta. Mm-hmm. So, you know, 8-10 hours away. So these are really great ways. You can go to their respective websites and sign up for these. And it's a great way to get some very quality award-winning meads shipped to you directly. So this next
and
one.
And really good because we don't see a lot of them. Here and in other places, we don't see a lot of them on the market. So you can't just roll up to the bottle shop and get one. But go on.
It's a great way to get some good meads delivered to you here in Louisiana in this kind of dry, barren land of mead. So this next one we have is going to be Moonlight Meadery. It is their wild. It's a wildflower mead. It's going to be a dry mead, standard strength mead coming in at 14%. And they use wild mountain blueberries in it. This mead is really nice in regards to its the blueberries come through because it's dry. You really get that blueberry, the acidity that the blueberries add to it. They recommend pairing it with cheese plates, grilled steak tips,
pork. Screams pork to me.
Yeah,
pork
this
loin.
Is absolutely. It's that acidity to really cut through that fat.
Yeah.
Great mead. Again, it kind of shows, even though we've had two meads, it shows that, you know, it's not just all Chaucer's mead, these thick, syrupy, cloying type meads, which of course have their place, but there's a big wild world out there that that the listeners really should explore.
Check it out and check out these different clubs, especially if you're listening around here in Southeast Louisiana. It's the best way because we really don't have, there's just a few, some of the older brands that I see occasionally that are on the market still. Interesting. So at any, Sal, coming up with the mead stuff, now that you are a certified mead judge, what are we looking to do?
So down the road, we've talked about this in the past. Once I ranked up to a national BJCP judge, I had the opportunity to start hosting both tasting exams for becoming certified in Louisiana as well as the written exams. Now that I've got the mead certification under my belt, we'll see if maybe we can get some more interest, get some more certified mead judges in the state and try to spread that love.
Yeah, there you go. And then I'm going to go out again and say the advocacy campaign for making mead the some sort of official beverage of Louisiana. We got the B component, like you said.
That's it.
Yeah, there you go. So you guys, we've got plenty of time here, but let's we have a really important event coming up here in June. The nickname is Larry Fest, right? That's not the full name. But that's coming up June 23rd, you guys, so tell us a little bit about that.
Correct.
It's a good charity event.
Yes. So our homebrew club, the Mystic Crew of Brew on the North Shore, this will be year 7 for us. We have put on this event to benefit the St. Tammany Humane Society. 100% of the proceeds go directly to them. We make absolutely no money off of this at all. We do it in honor of our friend who passed away 7 years ago, Larry Hartzog, who was a big advocate for the puppies and the kittens. This past year was our biggest year ever. We took in 16,000 that went directly to the St. Tammany Humane Society. This year, we'd like to make it 20 to give it to them. It's going to be June 23rd. It's going to be from 4 to 8 p.m. at the Castine Center. This year, we will be partnering with several of the commercial breweries to have a VIP area to
That's
where...
That's kind of a newer element, too, where you've been integrating some of the commercial breweries along with the home brewing.
It is. So last year, we had 23 commercial breweries as over 50 home brews. So this year, some of the home brewers are going to put some really special, really nice home brews out in the VIP area, as well as the commercial brewers are going to do some pretty nice stuff. So the tickets are going to be $35 at the door for the regular and $30 on Eventbrite. The VIP tickets will let you get in an hour early, as well as hit those special beers. That's $50 to do that. Again, it's going to be on June 23rd at the Castine Center from 4 to 8. 8 p.m. It is dog friendly, of course. We're going to have live music as well as we're going to have various food vendors as well.
Very cool. And so there's an event listing on Facebook, correct?
For that? Yes. Is that the best way to find it? So if you basically Larry Fest on Facebook, you will find us. All the most up-to-date information is up there, as well as if you want to be a commercial brewer and love to support us and support the cause and the Humane Society, or home brewer and want to support us, it'll show you how to get in touch with us as
cool.
well.
Excellent. Thanks for sharing that, Sal. Matt, tell us, we got a few more minutes here. Tell us a little bit about what do you got coming out new? What's coming out of the tank or the barrel soon?
Oh, so this Friday we'll be brewing another New England IPA. That's going to be all Citra hops.
Bandwagon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. No. The bandwagon came by with a bunch of Citra, so we're going to use it. In all seriousness, so we're doing it again. We had a lot of people asking for it, and we did a round of Seven Sisters IPA, which was I call it the Pacific Northwest IPA. Mm-hmm. It's not, it's a little bit more fuller than the West Coast IPA. And we did a round of that. We brought that back, and now we're kind of getting back into the New England kind of thing. And we'll cycle out of that, and we'll get into some other stuff later on this summer.
You mentioned a Doppelbock.
Yep, we have the Doppelbock. We that was our. I think we talked about that maybe on the last episode we did here.
Yeah.
The double decoction Doppelbock, that is in the serving tank. It's just kind of hanging out until we feel it gets the green light and it can hit the tap. Mm-hmm. Right now, I feel it's a little too early. We have the tap space, but we're not going to serve anything until we're.
Sure. Just so people know, what does it need to do? Does it need to rest for a while?
Yeah.
What are we trying to
do?
So
it's in the lagering state, and it's about 2 months into lagering. And as it does that, it starts to mellow out. It starts to get more rounded, and some of the... It's 8.5% alcohol, and some of that alcohol starts to soften. The malt character starts to kind of go into this more dimensional kind of phase, instead of being a little bit muddy like it started out as.
Okay.
So it just gets kind of a little smoothed out, a little bit more enjoyable. You start noticing the nuances of a true Doppelbock at that point.
Gotcha.
And we're almost there, and that should be coming out soon. Next week we'll be doing another batch of Helles. We already have a batch of Helles in the fermenter, but it seems to be selling so well that we're actually doubling up our batches in the fermenters.
Okay.
So we're ramping up the production of that. And then next week also we're going to be doing a sour pale ale.
Oh, cool.
With 100% Nelson hops.
Wow, very cool. Okay. Yeah. So we got about a minute and a half left, you guys, before I got to close the show. So tell people where you can find Old Ray Ale Brewing Company.
We are in Old Mandeville. We're about 4 or 5 blocks off the lakefront. So get off the causeway if you're coming from the city and just head to the east. And that will take you in our direction.
Right here on Girard Street.
On Girard Street by the St. Tammany Trailhead.
Yep, mm-hmm. Perfect. And then online?
Online Facebook? At oldrailbrewing.com. And there's also our Facebook page as well where we have our beer menu. Also on Untappd, we have the beer menu there. Facebook is where you can find all the updates.
Yep, excellent. And really quickly, Sal, 30 seconds, BJCP, Beer Judging Certification Program.
Yep, bjcp.org. Also, too, that is going to be the national website in regards to Louisiana, Facebook, Louisiana BJCP, Beer Judge Certification Program. It's a clearinghouse, a hub for all competitions, education, upcoming exams, the whole bit. Good way to network with a bunch of true beer nerds, beer folks.
And get a piece of paper to back it up.
Absolutely.
I dig it. You guys, thanks so much. I really appreciate it. Thanks again for hosting, Matt. Yeah. Sal, pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Thanks for sharing some wonderful stuff. Yeah. Friends, that's been another edition here of the NOLA Drink Show. Appreciate you tuning in. Hey, we'll let you know what's happening next week. We'll figure it out as we go, because that's what I always say. Who knows? We'll figure it out when it happens then. So I want to remind everybody, be kind to one another, use your turn signal, and until then, cheers, y'all.